Okay, welcome everybody. I'd like to call this committee of the whole meeting to order. Can I get a roll call?
Mrs. Avalos.
Here.
Mr. Davis.
Here.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Here.
Mrs. Hickey.
Here.
Mr. Moore.
Here.
Dr. Thompson.
Here.
Ms. Williams.
Here.
Okay, next order of business is to recognize visitors and invite comments. Does anybody out there want to address the board? Okay, that's two. Third item is to have a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
Okay. Right along, here we go. The Education Committee, Nicole Thompson, Chair.
Yes, we have a presentation to our Roosevelt
Great. Well, and so if I can, I'd like to just do a quick introduction. I know Larry's going to kind of kick us off here in just a moment, but first of all, thanks to so many folks for being willing to come out and learn a little bit more about this tonight. I'm especially grateful to have some of our Roosevelt Middle School faculty members with us and our math specialist, Nancy. So welcome, glad to have you here and to have the expertise in the room. Tonight, really the purpose of this presentation is to follow up on the presentation that occurred at the board meeting in December, which was kind of the initial recommendations that the administration was making at that time related to the very lengthy work that Larry Garsky, Tina Stecchetti, and the many teachers did over the course of the last 18 months or so on the review of the Roosevelt Middle School master schedule. And of course, at that meeting, there was a pretty good chronology of the history of the process over those 18 months that the committee went through, that the district administration also went through, to try to really come forth with the best iteration of a schedule that could address some of the concerns that the administration and teachers had identified. Particularly in the area of mathematics. The challenge, as most people I think who've been following this know, is that it was extremely difficult to isolate solutions to those problems without bringing other related issues to the table. And as a result, there were several different iterations, but in the end, none of them proved, I know, fully satisfactory, and particularly to the Board of Ed, who I know had very high expectations about making sure that whatever's implemented here is really getting to the heart of what the issues were that were identified. So, again, back in December, Larry did a fantastic job kind of presenting the work that the committee did. A very dedicated group of, again, of faculty and staff members, input obviously provided by particularly, members from different departments, different grade levels, and from math teachers who specifically have a pretty important dog in the fight on this, which is to ensure that our students get the best and most appropriate math instruction possible. Tonight, we are intending to come back, I know, do kind of a quick overview of the recommendations that were presented last month, and then kind of the second half of this presentation, speak to several of the questions that Board of Education members had about the recommendations that were being made. How those recommendations would be operationalized, some of the important considerations like cost, obviously other attending details. So that'll represent the second portion of the presentation. It's not all that especially lengthy, but I know that Larry, Allison, Nancy Mueller, our math specialist, we're all prepared to answer any questions or even just have kind of discussions that the board would like to have about any of these elements. So. Larry, I'll stop talking, and the person who really has good information can begin.
All right, a quick overview. I'll try to be as clear as I can and cover as many points as possible without being here totally clear. And I would say the meeting here is about the proposed Roosevelt schedule change, and I will say, we're not proposing a schedule change. We're actually proposing changes in some elements of the math program. One of which being two additional math teachers to open up more sections of math for students to reduce class sizes, not just to reduce class sizes for the sake of having less kids in class, but there is a lot of research on the fact that classes are smaller, that some benefits exist. We have feedback fathers of education said the most important thing a teacher can do is grade papers. Okay, and meaning that the kind of feedback that you give students, the kind of feedback you receive from them, and the relationships you have with them, the classroom discussions, the whole classroom discussion, very important. And research will say that the smaller class sizes will allow that to happen in a more effective way. So two math teachers is part one. The second part is not so much a new idea or something you wouldn't do anyway, but we are trying to make the time that we have in math more efficient. Okay? And this has been an ongoing thing for quite some time, probably 18 months. But the math department is working to realign and learn, prioritize the foundational standards that they're working with. Okay? If we didn't have enough time to do those things, we have to do it more efficiently. So I think they've done an outstanding job, and they've done it on a very regular basis. They're ensuring the vertical alignment, not just between 5'8", but 5'9", high school as well. Allison will dabble in that just a little bit. But having the work that's happening in the classroom prioritized in a way that is working most efficiently for not just the curriculum, but the instruction that's happening. Very important. That discussion may be one of the most important things that have come out of our looking into more math amendments. Thirdly, on our proposal is the AM Math Academy, we're calling it right now. And what that is it's 25 minutes every day that's available to students from 8 to 8:25. And we would expect that it would be our math teachers teaching those modules, and we'll call them modules at 25 minutes because we actually have curriculum-based modules that follow our curriculum for certain skills that students might be deficient in or gaps that they might have. And probably the most important part of those modules would be the pre- and post-test that we need to have, as opposed to looking at our norm reference tests as a way to see growth or success. We have criterion reference tests, which is, this is the information about the pre-test. The things that you don't know there, you now know at the end of that 3 or 4 weeks. It's really important to know, and that's one of the ways that you'll see later that you will find one of the most effective ways to gauge whether there's success in learning that. So, of course, that is a lot to think about. Who is going to be eligible, what's the parent communication going to be like, what's our expectations for the curriculum, for teacher prep. There's a lot to talk about for us. We would expect that information to be an ongoing discussion, probably in the spring. We'd like to have all of our bases covered and ready to roll for the fall so we can start planning that if we were to get them, our new math teachers as well, indoctrinate them to the program. And as I said to begin with, that also means no change to the current 8-day schedule. Okay. I think it's important to read this though, because as you can tell, this was not willy-nilly, oh, this is our proposal. A lot of thought went into this, and one of the reasons we're deciding for now not to do a schedule change is because the structure that's presently in place, we want to protect those elements of the academic program presently yielding effective results that meets the needs of the students. We don't want to kick out the legs of the structure that's working pretty well. Yeah, so, okay, this is some board requested information. This is going to come in probably better if we talk about these things. That's the
emergency. So as Larry just mentioned, is the board had some questions last time we met in December that we wanted to make sure we followed up on this one. Larry's discussed the Math Academy, the AM Academy, a little bit in previous slides, but a meeting with the 5-8 math department. I just tip of the hat, thank you for being here tonight, first of all, on the school night. They're a very cohesive group, and this work, as Larry mentioned, didn't start just recently. It's work that they've been doing the last couple of years. Certainly since Nancy Miller joined us. When our standards-based consultant arrived was working with us this fall and specifically spent some time with the 5-8 math group. She was referencing previous research that had been done about standards and essentially saying, even before the Common Core came out, which is more rigorous and more encompassing of math concepts, was that the standards generally, they're not necessarily K-12 standards, they're actually K-22 standards. So no matter what, there is far more material and stuff to be learned in the area of math than anybody has time for, period. So one of our initial objectives in terms of working together was looking at the curriculum, spent K-8, and specifically related to Roosevelt, looking at 5-8 and determining what are the core essential standards and the 5 big ideas across grade level that we want to make sure our students are experienced with, have exposure to, and are working towards mastery of those concepts. So they have been going unit by unit and pulling out those essential standards. And the second step of that work is looking at assessments to make sure that we are coherently and cohesively assessing all of those standards. They are also working on their scope and sequence. And I believe they already have a proposal that they are working on right now. They've got a draft scope and sequence that they want to make sure that they can work on. The Math Academy, we also want to make sure that we are supporting all of our learners. This includes students that have potential gaps and can also benefit from some additional enrichment. Some of both can be done in class, but in the essence of a situation where students need more time, having this Math AM Academy in the morning from 8 to 8:25 is the next best option that we have. And the planning for that is, they've already kicking around ideas, but the essential plan that's going to need to come this spring is, what is the criteria? What is the structure? Are we there to, the idea is always to support, but it's, does it get kids ready for a unit? Are we filling holes that kids have that haven't been filled over time? Or have maybe been exacerbated over time? So the purpose for the AM Academy is going to be flexible depending on the need of the time. So we want to make sure we're most responsive to students, and the best way that, that the 5-8 math team can determine where students are and what their particular needs are is unit by unit, looking at the common assessments that they're developing. So those common assessments will work to surface learning patterns and learning needs that kids have. And you want to be as targeted as possible. You don't want to put 25 kids with 25 different needs into one of those sections of the AM Academy. You want to be really targeted about this group of kids needs a little boost with fractions before they head into the ratio and proportion unit. This group of kids may need some percentages work before they move it to the decimal unit. So you want to make sure that you're targeted and efficient in the time you spend with your students. So they've already started discussions about that, and that is going to be their spring work. The other piece is, if you want to make sure you're getting a good boost, you want to be focused, but you want it to be time intensive. And if you're going to do a fractions module, you really only need 4 weeks to go in and do any type of intervention. So the measuring of that, of course, Larry talked about the pre and post in terms of checking growth and how kids are doing is also an essential piece of that. We'll address that a little bit more as we go forward. And then certainly, once we've conceptualized how many sections we have, who's teaching it, the idea is that our 5-8 math teachers are going to teach it themselves. So you have the expertise and the familiarities. Students will have relationships with their teachers already. We obviously know that they know the content. So making sure that we pair teachers to and certainly once we conceptualize that and we know what we have to offer, we will communicate that out to families. So this is a confusing chart. So there are a lot of arrows. So this is the latest flow chart of the different math paths over at Oak Park River Forest High School. Now, since I don't live in this world, I'm not fluid and explaining this as well as somebody from OPRF would be. But I think if you look at this from a high-level takeaway, as you can see, there are many different ways to get to San Diego. So if your goal is to get to a certain level of calculus, there are many pathways that you could potentially take. So if there are concerns, once you get in one track and you stay in that track, there are different options here for students as they move through the system at OPRF. And they've worked really hard to look at their math offerings and to try to open up additional access for people. For those of you that have 8th grade students maybe going to a PRF next year, I'm sure they explained the closing process to you.
We have this on my refrigerator.
Yeah, so,
look at it every
you know, and they we articulate with them regularly, so it's really important that we are in communication with them in terms of how our program flows into theirs. We're certainly also talking to 97 and 200, so as a tri-district, philosophically, we really are on the same page. And though we've been working independently, we come together routinely to articulate, we're finding that we do come together, even though it's maybe only 3 times a year, that we are moving in a parallel way that we can think is good. And we are using the same resources, which is helpful. So that's a glance at all the opportunities you have over PRF. One of the challenges of trying to put together a block schedule, in addition to the unique fact that as a middle school we have 4 grades instead of 3, that really was a compounding factor, trying to do 4 grades and schedule them proved to be a lot more difficult. Block schedules are also, can be, more expensive. So one of the things that we felt was really important is we want to make sure that we're being responsible with any additional FTE, which is additional long-term cost to the district. And a couple of the models that we looked at, while they would have achieved our educational goals and our aspirational goals, they were cost prohibitive. So we want to make sure that we're keeping this color. So Larry mentioned the class size, the reduction of class size. Reduction of class size in and of itself doesn't solve problems. It's what you do in the classroom with fewer kids that makes it a more optimal experience. So he mentioned the feedback, he mentioned the relationships, and the class discussion. All of those work together in tandem to provide a higher quality experience for students. So being able to reduce the class size is a good way to get at some of our goals. So the estimated cost here, approximately, including salary and benefits, approximately $2,000. A teacher times 2, $160,000. So because the 5 through 8 math teachers have been so invested in making sure that they can support all of our students, is they are working outside of their full-time FTE. So we want to make sure that we're compensating them appropriately, not only for the time that they're spending with their students, but also for the prep that they have to do. Because in order to make sure that this runs well, you have to be adequately prepared provide targeted support for students. So we're looking at 21 sections across a week, times approximately 29 weeks. So part of that, because there are usually 32 weeks in a school year, is by the end of the year this year, we'll know at the beginning of the year, we'll likely need intervention when school starts. So hitting the ground running, once we get started and welcome kids into school, we can make sure that there's not a lot of lag time. So that's approximately $29,000, and then certainly my role in this is making sure that everybody is properly resourced. So we have some materials that we're using now that we're pretty happy with, but we want to make sure that we expand the resource options that need to meet some kids, and so I will certainly help support in that way. So when you add all that together, our grand total for our estimated annual expense is just under $10,000. Of course, I think the most appropriate question anyone would want to ask is, how do you know, if we're going to spend all this money, how do we know that it's working? So there are several metrics that we want to look at. First of all, we want to make sure students are there. So we want to make sure we know who is there, how frequently are there. The attendance is going to be really important. Certainly, anytime you're doing any kind of intervention, you want to take note of where students are when they come in and the progress they've made when they leave. So the materials that we use have that sort of monitoring in them, so we can easily track and post module to see if they've grown and achieve the goals that we wanted them to achieve by attending the academy. Certainly there's always summative growth over time. When we look at IAR, we look at MAP. MAP tends to be a higher level summary of kids' knowledge as opposed to what's aligned to the curriculum, but it is another measure to look at. Certainly we think it's important to hear back from the students. How was the experience for you? Did you feel that it helped you? Do you feel that it was worthwhile? Do you feel that you achieved what you hoped you were going to be able to achieve? And then looking at all that data together, hopefully we'll get a good sense of how effective it is and how it's working for students.
Well, thank you for that presentation, and you know, here we are at the next presentation of this proposal. after many presentations, but this last one at the last meeting, I think some questions surfaced about why this is the appropriate way to move forward, and I appreciate the use of Hattie and all of the evidence-based research that you brought to it. I believe that you answered our questions about the AM Academy, although that's still, you know, some things need to be fleshed out there. But it is targeted intervention, and I think we would call that, in terms of multi-tiered systems of support, that would be a tier two intervention where we target groups, the needs of certain groups of kids, and we offer an intervention for a finite period of time. So I really appreciate that. The assessments, using the assessments to evaluate the success of an intervention like this is very important. Going back to the universal, the big change, reducing class size for math, we believe that is going to move the needle forward for all of our kids, because all of our kids will experience a smaller class size. They will have more time with their teachers. Teachers will have more time to assess their needs and act accordingly. So, do we have any questions from the board?
Could you give an example of, I don't know, a general idea of what the morning will be? Like, how much faculty will be there? So you can't really determine how many kids yet. But the people in the crowd just hear two teachers. So some people may go home and think, there'll be two teachers and 500 kids there. Is that what's going to work?
You mean for the AM Academy, what's it going to look like?
Yes.
The AM Academy, we're hoping to have our math teachers as much as possible.
Okay.
Not solely working those classes from 18 to 25. All of our teachers are on the clock starting at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
So everybody's here.
Okay.
So teachers will be here, but that's time when they're planning for lessons and things like that, which is why Allison was talking about compensating them for their time. Goes well over their instruction and it's per week, per their contract. The vision that I have in my mind is that each grade level is being represented every morning. We don't necessarily have the same group every morning. It might be a Tuesday, Thursday group, maybe a Monday, Wednesday group, maybe a Friday group. So that's how I envision it.
Okay.
And the teachers, we're lucky because we have teacher meetings every day, not every day, solely about math and instruction related to interventions anytime. But once a week we do. That's a really powerful time for the teachers to actually talk informally as well as formally about the criteria for kids needing assistance. And nobody knows who needs assistance more than their teacher.
Okay.
So that's going to be really powerful. How many kids in classes? We're not sure exactly.
Yeah, sure, yeah, but there'll be enough people there, faculty to cover.
So will there be differentiation within the Math Academy, or is the thought that each group is sort of working on the same set of skills? How will you manage that? These kids will be at different levels on different things.
So we anticipate that the Math Academy will meet the needs of the students that are part of the Math Academy. So one vision is, prior to teaching a unit, we'll have a sense of which students might struggle based on the prior knowledge we'll be leaning on for students to be successful in that unit. And those are the students that we would invite to that 3 or 4 week academy. Colleagues here have other thoughts, but
I feel like that makes sense. And I would say in only like a 25-minute period, it would be hard to differentiate. So like Allison said, it would be good to pull a group of students who all have like a similar need and really focus intently on that need for that amount of time.
So yeah, the curriculum, I feel like that they used summer school, it's specific concepts. And I think as a teacher, it would be a lot easier if we were all kind of doing the same thing than if you had six kids and you were doing six different things.
One thing that I think we'll really have to keep an eye to is what I'm hearing predominantly is that we'll identify kids who need support and recommend them for Math Academy. that has the danger of it being stigmatized as the place where you go where you need help in math, right? So kids won't be excited about going, and it won't have this idea of enrichment. It'll feel like just for support. So I just think as we plan, and we have to think carefully about how do we position this as something to be excited about, that the kids can be excited about, versus, oh my God, I got flagged to go to Math Academy. I'm terrified. So I think that's something we have to really be very careful about, how we position it and how we sell it and how we sort of navigate it for the kids, especially. And for the parents as well.
I also have a concern. Anytime you're offering enrichment before school, I think there are situations where kids who really need it do not necessarily have the support at home to get there. And parents who will be saying, okay, this is something you really need to do. Because once you're talking about instruction outside of the school day, the compliance becomes more complicated. And I am concerned that the kids who really need that help will get there, that they will get there on time, that they will have the support at home that gets them into the class that they where they need the help, and make sure that they show up consistently. And because, you know, as soon as you miss 2 days of Math Academy, what happens? How do you get those kids back? So, you know, that's I love the fact that you've worked so hard to hold the costs down, that we have worked so hard to maintain the important programming and the structure that makes it possible for us to offer all of the enrichment that we do to our kids here, with, you know, holding on to our music and our art and all of those things that are so important to the community. I really appreciate the creative thinking that has gone into all of this. But I look at the possible places where it will slip, because that's what happens when you're dealing with kids who are individuals, and when you're expecting them to get there outside of the time that they normally would. And also, you know, if you're thinking about what happens before school, if you've got kids coming in for band who are supposed to be in Math Academy, what do we do with that conflict? And some of the things that happen before school that are otherwise very important. You know, I love the concept, but I can see places where it's going to be a work in progress, and where the enforcement is a bad word. I agree with Stacy that how you package it is going to be very important to the kids and to the parents. And their compliance with it will be dependent on how they view it. And there's a lot to think about. I appreciate so much all of the thought that has gone into it up to this point. And I appreciate, you know, the willingness of our math teachers to work hard to find efficiencies in order to protect these things for the kids. And, you know, we're still kind of trying to put, you know, 8 pounds of flour in a 5-pound bag. And I can see that there are going to be challenges here. But thank you for everything that you've done so far, and I hope that you will keep the board up to speed on where we find challenges with getting kids there before school. Because, you know, I had 5 kids who were in band and this, that, and the other thing, and getting them where they need to be is not an easy thing. And I think we have more parents now who work and who will, you know, will need to be flexible with this, with their children's schedules. And that's a little bit less of a challenge in middle school. Kids can normally get where they need to be without rides, but I know an awful lot of situations where kids do get rides to school from mom and dad, and that gets them where they need to go. So, you know, I'm sure these are concerns that have occurred to all of you. I love the thinking outside of the box that's happening here, and I hope that you will keep the board in the loop on how well it's working, and, you know, what I know you'll be thinking of how to fix these problems as they come up. So thank you for that.
So we're talking about sustainability, we're talking about logistics, things that, you know, obviously I know that are on your radar, and I know that the teachers that, you know, are volunteering for this, I hear that they're morning people, and that they really like to, you know, get things going quickly. So I appreciate that as well.
I was just wondering if you guys can speak to the ongoing faculty development that's going to maximize that in classroom time, so that we can just, you know, use the smaller classroom and make it as efficient as possible. Can you just talk to everyone here?
Nancy, you're not going to have to talk. No. She might be able to speak as to how that process is working, because she kind
of works. Well, so you want to know like how we, why we think that having a smaller class size
or something is not that far.
Like help teachers prepare for to make that time more efficient.
Oh, so well, I think one of the, when we were thinking about having a smaller class size and what the benefits are, and Allison has already talked about, the research doesn't necessarily support just having fewer children in front of you is going to yield better results. But when we, in the way that we all teach math, is we do a very quick introduction to a problem, and then we put it in the students' hands to work collaboratively to solve the problem. Just today, I had the opportunity to observe a really fun game in Sonny's classroom. He was, comparing fractions. And so he talked to kids about how to play the game, and he did a few rounds, played himself, and then talked about what he was expecting in terms of how kids will record the results of every round. And then he turned it over to them to play the game. And there was a lot of math in the game that he was having them play. And so while students are playing this game, he then will walk around and notice what's happening on each of those rounds as kids are playing the game. And I don't know if you've been in Sonny's classroom lately, but it's a relatively small classroom with a lot of desks because he has some very large classes. It literally is difficult to get around his classroom, especially if you're a full figure, Gail. So he doesn't really have an opportunity to see what's happening at each of those, in each of those groups, because of the size of his classes. If that class were reduced by 30%, he would have an opportunity to visit with all of those groups, and he would know who's really using great strategies and who might need a little more work with, using benchmark of a half. And so I think what is really important when we're talking about using formative assessment and having kids have rich discussions is the quality of instruction that's already occurring, and it's already occurring here, but it will be so much better when we have these smaller numbers of students to touch base with as we're instructing.
I think the quality of the questioning is really key. I think, at least when I think back to my math experience, which just open a textbook, you know, do the problem set and move on, right? Don't get a lot of feedback, it's either right or it's wrong. But the key with some of these, really pushing students' thinking, is asking targeted questions to push and challenge kids in the moment as they're playing a game, as they're doing certain things. So the opportunity to connect is inherent with this pedagogy, because every kid who's approaching something, you will have a whole range of solutions that are not the same. Kids don't think the same, and they have really unique solutions to problems. So connecting with them as individuals to push their thinking or push a group's thinking is really, really important. So. And that's a key pedagogical strategy that we've been working on K-8s, and it's something that has to be developed. It's not something that teachers necessarily have when they walk in the door. So it's ongoing things like that, pedagogical strategies that we're looking at. And, you know, just systemically, this is only what, the third year we've had common materials for K-8s. Year one is the materials, now we're working on assessment plans, so we really are in a stronger position every year when we add on the next layer of coherent and aligned curriculum that allows us to surface exist, that these patterns exist, and it's important for us to service them and identify them. We cannot do that unless you have common materials, common assessments, and a agreed upon set of pedagogical strategies that you're using. So the good news is we have all of those things, and we continue to develop our programming every day.
Nicole, I also think differentiation and enrichment is a lot easier if you've got a smaller group of students. With 28 to 30 students, it's really hard. It's much harder to differentiate and see and check in where everyone's at all the time. The smaller amount, I feel like I just have a better grasp of where kids were at, and then I could kind of challenge them really.
Well, the teachers have support for what they are doing from mentors and from, you know, are we going to pull some of our finer teachers and, you know, get them in and out of other people's classrooms to share best practices and evaluate all of this as we go, because we are taking some different approaches and we're looking for efficiencies, and there will be people for whom that's easier than it is for others. And if teachers need extra support, I would assume that you're in the main driver's seat for that. But how are we going to make sure that they all get the support that they need to make this really work well?
Yeah, that's been on our short-term goal list, as visiting each other's classrooms, because I have this amazing job where I get to go into all of the classrooms and I get to learn. Every visit I make, I learn. And so I've tried to take one of our math team release days and use it as I've been calling it a peer collaboration lesson. And every time that we schedule a lesson like a day like that, when we're all released so we all have subs, there's something else moves ahead of that goal. And so, this year, maybe, hopefully, we'll be able to do that. But one of the things that we've worked on as a math team collaboratively is we've worked on what we are referring to as year-end common assessments. So it helped us really think about what our really important, really big ideas are at each grade level and what we want kids to know at the end of each course. So at the end of 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. And our work on that keeps moving up to the top of the list. First, we created the assessments, then we scored them, then we analyzed the data. And so we've gotten a lot of information from that, but I agree with you completely. We learn so much from each other. So, when we ask for a day like that, it's always looked upon favorably. So, but I agree with you, that's a really important thing for us to do.
And it would probably be helpful if you didn't do that on a day when you had everybody together. I mean, that's one level, certainly, of sharing information. But I think watching each other in the classroom, especially with you're looking for new efficiencies and you're looking for ways to maximize how successfully you use your time. And there, you know, I think there's so much to be learned from each other about that. So if you watch that done well, that would be worth a great deal to everybody.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You're 100% right about that.
Nancy wouldn't tutor on porn. Nancy was always in the classroom, always co-teaching as well. And it's really amazing and powerful to watch. Teachers here would know you would agree.
I think one efficiency that's worth mentioning is are released 5 through 8 and they're looking at standards together. I think people don't, unless you're in the weeds like we are all the time, take for granted the fact that when we put a standard up on a board, this team can agree on what evidence, what is an evidence of that standard. So if you're in a team where you don't agree, like here's the standard, and you're looking at evidence and they're like, oh, I think it's this, no, I think it's this, they can sit around a table and they can say, for this standard, this is the evidence that we all expect to see, and they can all agree on that. And being efficient in that way, and that's a lot of what the PD has been, is that we're looking, especially with the standards-based grading, what quality do we expect to see, and do we agree on it when we see it? And that's really, really important, because if you don't agree on that, you spend a lot of time arguing about it. efficiency that we're building there is that when standards come up, the standard for evidence, they've discussed and they have, you know, determined what is acceptable and what is not. And as a team, knowing that in advance makes you far more efficient when you're working together than when you don't have that kind of rapport or shared understanding. So that's an important piece too.
So going back to, you know, why we think this is going to be successful, you mentioned John Hattie and another impact on learning in terms of systems is collective teacher efficacy. When teachers believe that they together can work together toward a common goal and achieve that goal very efficiently and effectively, then we see high rates of achievement. And so I think that's everything that you just explained right there. So I appreciate that. Unless there's other questions, one other comment is that I just want to comment on the process and just thank Larry, Ed, the team, Allison. It was transparent, it was collaborative, community-based, and it was definitely goal-oriented. And so our eyes were always on the prize. I appreciate that. Some other issues were brought up during board meetings, and some other needs, maybe by other departments, were brought up, and I hope that we address those as well in terms of professional development for other departments that, you know, kind of voice that they needed some of that support. So I have no other comments.
I do have one last question since we have our math teachers here. Thank you for coming out tonight. Since math was what sort of inspired this whole schedule discussion at Roosevelt, I would love to hear you guys address directly with the addition of Math Academy with smaller class size. We made a case last year that we needed more time, because we don't have enough time to teach the math that we want to teach. So as we sit here today with what we know we're planning, I would just love to hear from you guys about if you think that you have confidence that this will get us where we need to be. And then, you know, obviously it is something, you know, Ed and his team will have to keep an eye to, so that at some point you have to say, okay, is this doing what we needed it to do? So I would just love to hear you guys comment on, is this addressing the original, the impetus of why we started this whole conversation?
Since you mentioned me, if it's all right, I'd like to reply to that and then let them jump in, because I'd like to frame a response, I think, in fairness. I know I personally didn't ask either Meg or Sonny to have to, you know, speak to that specifically. If they're willing to, I think that's great. But admittedly, we would love to have a 65-minute math period, which we don't have and will not have. So this is a satisficing solution. In a perfect world, and I hope I'm not stealing either of your thunder, you know, our math teachers would like to have substantially more time, and in a perfect world, we would want to provide that for them. We feel like that would be by far the most advantageous outcome. The problem is that all of these other factors that are important too, you know, can't be discounted. The impact on other programs, that the sacrifices that I think collectively we kind of have all agreed in different ways, the community has expressed some concerns, board members have expressed concerns, administrators, teachers. Some of those sacrifices are really, could be deleterious to the overall program. So that's why we're here, with a solution that is intended to be targeted. You know, some of the other concerns I know that have been mentioned about, you know, having students come enthusiastically, there will be some that don't. And I know our math teachers are the best math teachers I know I've ever had the opportunity to work with. They will make it as enticing as possible, but there will be some children who won't want to do what's best for them, just like I don't want to eat broccoli, even though it's what's best for them. So, you know, we'll do everything we can to make this enticing. I think the goal, so not so much enticing would be the goal, but help both students and families see that it has value. The idea that a child can come in on a couple of days a week and have the equivalent in either of those mornings or both of those mornings of half an additional math lesson with potentially their math teacher in a small group setting at no charge. We have many families in our community who are having to provide that for their children through private tutoring or through some other resources that, you know, aren't equitable, certainly, and maybe aren't addressing the source of the issue. So I realize I totally unfairly inserted myself into your question, but I felt it was important to acknowledge right up front that this, while we feel confident, is a very good solution in light of all of the limitations, it is not the one that, if we had everything we wanted. Would either of you care to share your own feelings?
I have a comment.
May I, because
okay.
I cut off Stacy from what she wanted to know, and I just wanted to make sure they had the chance to speak.
I think it's a step in the right direction, but I don't think it's, I think like you said, I love 60 minutes of math every day. For 14 years I've taught, I've only had 40. I've made do, but I do feel like with the increase in rigor of the standards and the quantity of standards expected to be taught in my grade, the 40 minutes, it's a challenge. It is a real challenge, and a lot of kids in 40 minutes struggle to stay afloat and need extra support. And I think Math Academy at least is a step in the right direction, and I don't know how big of a step it is until we actually do it. And I completely agree with Barb. I think the getting kids to come is going to be the biggest challenge. It's not going to be teachers who want to help. We want to help. We love kids. It's not, you know, programs. It's really, I think, if we can get them to come, we can do good things with them. I would like more time, but like I said, I think this is definitely at least a step in the right direction. It's more than what they are currently getting. So while I don't feel we got everything we like, it's at least an improvement. And I think the class size would definitely be beneficial. I think I would definitely feel that a lot.
Do you see it requiring changes to classroom management? I'm sorry, Judy,
that's
I cut
okay.
you off. In any changes in how you're managing your classrooms?
The class size going down?
Well, all of these changes. You know, I have a daughter who's a teacher, and I know that one of the more challenging things that teachers have to do is to manage what happens in the classroom. And that some of these changes that we're talking about will be different for the kids. And you're doing more with less time. And I'm just asking, are we going to be offering professional development and opportunities to talk about any of those kinds of challenges in addition to managing the curriculum? You know, that's obviously one piece of what goes on in the classroom. But in some ways, it may not, I mean, it, all everything that happens there is important, but how the classroom is managed, how discussions are handled, and how much interaction there is between the kids, how do you keep them on track? You know, I would think that continuing to do more with less is going to provide, you know, more with less time is going to provide challenges in that area too. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Would there be a downside to having a smaller class size?
No, I think there's, I'm sure that there's an upside, but I'm just thinking that it may be different enough that, you know, sharing best practices and how you're managing your classroom and how you're targeting discussion and those kinds of things. I wonder if you're anticipating needing to provide additional support in those areas.
I personally have taught CMP3 for many years. I taught it prior to coming to the district. I know a number of our teachers did as well. So I feel like we have a fair amount of experience with that type of lesson planning of, you know, proposing a big question and letting them work, you know, kind of like the independent work time and then the partner work time and bringing it back to the class discussion. That being said, it's a different style of math teaching, and I've had math students who have lamented that some miss the traditional way that they sort of even remember as little kids, and that was how I was taught. Some flourish under the, like, teacher does it, do it just like I do it, and they kind of love just being told how to do it, and it is a shift for children to make them almost think more, you know what I mean? And some, that might be a little scary for them, you know what I mean? If they experience a little bit of, like, struggle with that, that can be a little scary, but I think it, yeah, I think if we have teachers who feel confident to do it, that works. I do think, like you said, if we can get in each other's classroom and observe teachers who feel confident with that teaching model, that definitely helps. Because I feel like I had the benefit of seeing that, so that's like where I feel like strong doing it. So
you feel like a lot of the foundation is already in place for that particular issue.
I was going to say, I don't see much changing except me being able to talk to more kids.
Okay.
And providing quicker and more efficient feedback.
Because this style has been what has been in place for the last couple of years.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so there's
been
professional development.
Conversations instead of just do, there's a lot more talking.
And the kids who you're now getting in fifth grade have been receiving this type of instruction and all that.
So just to clarify, we have moved from a didactic form of approach to teaching by telling.
Mm-hmm.
Or we've attempted to move all math instruction away from that toward a student-centered, more rigorous, challenging curriculum. We've been doing that for several years now. And so now we're trying to facilitate an environment where immediate formative feedback which is necessary for this new kind of instruction, which is not new for everyone, right? But we know is accepted more widely, more completely by the education community as effective. Right? So that's what brought us here. Correct me if I'm wrong.
And back to poor Judy, whose question is...
Oh, I just want to acknowledge, I mean, just sort of a comment that in response to what Ed said, you know, that the Math Academy is going to provide an opportunity for kids to get some extra support and enrichment, which in some cases, some parents and families are doing outside of school anyway, and they're going to be getting the support at no charge. Let's be clear, it is an extra charge to the taxpayers, and I just want to be very aware of the extra money that will be spent on providing Math Academy, because I think we have a fiduciary responsibility
Math Academy and an additional ongoing cost of $197,000 a year, which is not nothing.
Correct.
Sure.
And so I think we just need to acknowledge that and just it is an additional cost to the taxpayers.
And
it might not be a direct additional cost to the family.
As one of seven board members hearing the research over the years and looking at response to intervention, which moved to multi-tiered systems of support, this kind of an intervention is again pretty well accepted as effective if it's done effectively. And all of the issues that were brought up, I know, are things that are on our plate. And I think this being an extra, terming it as an extra, I don't view it that way. I think that looking at targeted interventions for students who need extra support is part of our holistic approach to education. And so this is where we found the time. And so I'm very appreciative that, this was the solution without, not being able to, fit a block schedule together that may have jeopardized other efficiencies and effectiveness of the whole system. So I appreciate the cost. I agree with you completely that it is, that it is an additional cost.
Right.
But in terms of building a system of supports that that is as effective as it can be for our community, I'm hoping, and the evidence will show in years to come, that this was the right.
I just like for us to continue to be transparent as things come up. Just keep the public informed of, we started school for a lot of children at 8 o'clock in the morning. I need to cross some guards there earlier, things like that. Just all the things we have to consider. Just make the program flow initially without any.
Larry, have we done thinking about what would happen in a scenario where a child has been targeted as needing the intervention and they don't appear in the morning when they're supposed to be there for one or 2 days at a time? How are you going to?
I'll tell you, we have support systems during the school day that kids still don't show up to.
Mm-hmm.
Lunchtime, our teachers are always offering assistance. Student, hey, you see me at lunchtime, first half of lunch, and they don't show up.
And they don't show up.
And they ask them again, they don't show up. So you can't put them in a headlock and drag them into the classroom. So we already have those issues, and it's a lot of nagging on our part because we don't have a dungeon, we don't have a straitjacket. but it's encouraging
Well, and now you'll be nagging parents in addition to
You talk about
the kids, and that is not an inconsequential issue either.
Yeah. I said initially last month when I presented that this is a problem that has to be taken really seriously. The communication to parents will be formal. If anybody had any experience with our STAR program of old, it was had some formalities to it that I think were very important and worked well. The parents knew exactly what their child would be doing and signing off on it. They had to actually come out of an academic class to do that work, which was really a difficult conversation to have with the parent. This, they don't have to come out of an academic. And usually the academic area that they came out of was art and music, foreign language. We think we're ahead, a little bit ahead of the game. It's just a matter of getting them here at 8 o'clock. And I'll tell you this, if you come in here at 8:05 on any day, there's 150 kids laying on the floor, chit-chatting, and playing games, and stuff like that. So getting here at 8 o'clock, we know kids can get here at 8 o'clock.
But getting here at 8 o'clock to do serious work is a little bit different than getting here to show up and be in the multi-purpose room with your friends.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the board, concerns? Okay. Well, then we're going to move to the next agenda item, which is an action item to approve. So I would need a motion to approve the Roosevelt Middle School math programming recommendations.
So moved.
Second.
Mrs. Avalos.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracius.
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Dr. Thompson.
Yes.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Can I get a motion to adjourn? But before I adjourn, I want to say one more time, thank you very much for your work this year and last year. Dr. Cotton, Larry,
thank
Dr.
you all.
And crunching numbers, always out. Thank you, Anthony Cozy. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.